calls. The accuracy rates varied a great deal based on the question, but when it came to one of the most important questions, operators provided the right answer only 41% of the time. Shortly after taking office, Vice President Dick Cheney fought to take over one of the National Security Advisor's key duties, claims an unnamed ex-official in the June issue of Vanity Fair. At one point early in the Bush administration, a former official tells me, Cheney wanted to chair meetings of the National Security Council, quote, principals, unquote. The Secretary of State and Defense, the CIA director, and so on, in Bush's absence, co-opting the usual role of the National Security Advisor, then Condoleezza Rice, writes Vanity Fair's national editor Todd Purdom in an advance copy provided by the magazine to Raw Story. The House approved criminal penalties and fines up to $150 million Wednesday for energy companies caught price gouging as lawmakers responded to public anger over high gasoline prices and huge oil industry profits. The legislation, receiving broad bipartisan support, passed 389-34 and must now be considered by the Senate. But a proposal aimed at making it easier to expand or build refineries fell short, 237-188. It needed two-thirds approval to pass under special House procedures. The U.S. Postal Service said Wednesday it wants to raise the price of a first-class stamp by 3 cents to 42 cents and proposed a forever stamp that people could use as a hedge against future rate increases. A forever stamp would help ease the transition to any future price adjustments. The forever stamp would help soften the blow of a rate increase by allowing customers to stock up. As originally proposed, it would sell for the first-class rate, and once purchased, the special stamp would remain valid for whatever the first-class rate is when it is used, regardless of future increases. This is the news on the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
The major record labels say that downloading music from the internet is stealing, stealing, stealing. But according to these people, making a mixtape for your friend is stealing too. So is making a tape of a radio show.
Home radio. We play the songs that sound more like everyone else than anyone else.
When a rock band plays an AC/DC cover at a bar that doesn't pay ASCAP. That's stealing. Or have you ever sung happy birthday to your friend at a restaurant?
Warning!
Happy birthday is copyrighted. So if you're singing in a public place, you'd better be paying royalties or you'll be
stealing music.
Man down!
Does all this stuff about stealing music sound absurd? Would you rather have a world where our music culture wasn't the intellectual property of five corporations? Then stop giving them your money and make sure your friends and family don't either. Better yet, try burning them a CD. If we pull the plug on major labels, music gets better. Find out more about what you can do. Check out downhillbattle.org.
Boston.com reports, the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, accusing the White House of a, quote, very blatant encroachment, unquote, on congressional authority, said yesterday he will hold an oversight hearing into President Bush's assertion that he has the power to bypass more than 750 laws enacted over the past 5 years. Republican Arlen Specter said, quote, there is some need for some oversight by Congress to assert its authority here, unquote. He continued, quote, what's the point of having a statute if the president can cherry-pick what he likes and what he doesn't like, unquote. Specter said he plans to hold the hearings in June. He said he intends to call administration officials to explain and defend the president's claims of authority, as well to invite constitutional scholars to testify on whether Bush has overstepped the boundaries of his power. Raw Story reports, a one-sentence item in the ABC News political report, The Note, hints the CIA leak jury is meeting today. The grand jury investigating the CIA leak may meet this morning at the federal courthouse in Washington, D.C., The Note says. The ABC report is one of the most popular go-to roundups for Washington insiders. No other details are available. The report could not be independently confirmed. Recent reports suggest the jury will continue to meet in the next 2 weeks as they decide the fate of presidential advisor Karl Rove. Rove's lawyers have been told the decision on whether to indict him for obstructing justice in the investigation of the outing of CIA agent Valerie Plame Wilson will be made within weeks. Raw Story also reports MSNBC confirms outed CIA agent Valerie Plame Wilson was working on Iran. This is the news on the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network. From Sydney, I'm John Fox.
We're here discussing child development with some experts. Tell me the normal development of, say, a 2-year-old.
My truck.
So a child that age should know 2 to 4 word phrases. Good. And what about cognitive development? Ah, engaging in pretend play. I see. And what of social
development? Look, Anna!
Being enthusiastic about the company of other children. All right, thank you.
It's time to change how we view a child's growth. It's not just physical. There are milestones your child should reach in how he plays, learns, speaks, and acts. A delay in any of these areas could be a sign of a developmental problem, even autism. The good news is, the earlier it's recognized, the more you can do to help your child reach his full potential. Talk with a doctor. Visit cdc.gov/act early or call 1-800-CDC-INFO. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Learn the signs. Act early.
Hello?
Louise, it's Ralph. Listen, would you go out with me tomorrow?
At 8? Ralph, I'd love to.
I have an appointment with my orthopedic surgeon, and I really want you to come along.
A doctor's office? That's so special. Oh, I just remembered. I have to delete some emails.
Come on, Louise. We're going to talk about the pain in my hip, and I could use a little support.
I guess I'm not very hip.
You could take notes and help me remember stuff. Look, I have all my doctor questions written down, but there's so much to remember. I need you there with me so I don't miss anything.
Couldn't we just play miniature golf?
Louise, I'm not asking for a kidney.
Bringing someone to your appointment is a good way to make sure you and your physician are on the same page. The idea is to partner with your doctor and share information so you can make informed decisions together. For more on patient-doctor communications, visit orthoinfo.org, a message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, where patient-centered care means getting better together.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
And good evening. Welcome to Head On with Bob Kincaid. I'm Agnes. I'm your producer. And tonight is Wednesday night prayer meeting. What are we going to pray about tonight? I guess we have all kinds of things. Bob will be with us very shortly. And we already have callers on the line waiting. So we are going to start taking calls. Here's David. Hi, David.
Good evening, Agnes.
How are you?
Where's Bob? Did he leave? Did he go to a different planet with the Scientologists?
Oh, no. He didn't go to Scientology or anything. He's just on a little hiatus just for a few minutes.
Oh, okay. Well, I just wanted to say a few things. I have an idea for the show. I call it my grand idea.
Okay.
And I'd also like to pay my respects to Tiger Woods' dad and Lou Rokeiser. They both passed on.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that.
So, going to my grand idea now.
Okay.
This is the idea I have. Everyone who promotes ideas and they have a platform. And they are currently informed and they're intelligent. I think we need to do something with these ideas other than it just going into the ether. And the reason I say that is because the internet is opinion op-ed to me on an overload. We have so much information. We talk about it so much. The protests, people in the streets and whatnot. nobody really pays attention to that. So we need to take it to a further step. And here's what I'm proposing. I'm proposing we start a official think tank that involves everyone in the head-on radio network, even all the callers, so they can be like consultants.
I think that's a great idea.
Now here's one way we could propose this to progressive candidates. There could be candidates on the bill right now that could have some of the ideas that we're saying. It could really spark their mind in a way. So what I think we should do is from now on, of the ideas that we have, we should sketch together an outline, everybody, whether it's on a message board or something, and put together an kind of like our project for a head-on century, I guess. Sort of.
Well, that's a great idea. I mean, it's a grassroots effort.
I think that's the reason why investors don't jump on board for a lot of progressive ideas and basically progressive organizations, because there isn't something with a plan that they can see, and because people are so visual, they're not mental of when they hear an idea or something, or they hear something. We live in a time where everything has to be in writing, kind of like a model of how everything will work and function. And I think everybody who calls in can be basically a consultant, and they can have their idea tweaked and just kind of just basically thrown in the mix of ideas. And I just think personally that that's the way to get out these ideas to the current candidates we want, or the people in office we like Dennis Kucinich. I mean,
he's a wonderful man,
right? Because once we say something and whatnot, it goes in the archives and whatnot. But the problem is that these ideas aren't being utilized and aren't being properly digested by the elected officials that represent us. So I think that a think tank is probably the next step in what we can do to achieve our goals of at least getting the train back on the tracks. Who knows where it'll lead us, but...
Well, I mean, that's one thing about the progressive movement, and it's one thing about our listeners. We have the most intelligent people around. We really do. And a lot of times, in times like these, the intelligent people are the ones who are ignored.
That's true.
And, you know, when we look at our representatives that we put in office, we expect them to represent us, not other interests.
Right. And I think when we have something on paper that represents the proper of getting these ideas out to the public and whatnot, I think as soon as we have it on paper and a model, I think that's when investors will start to step up into the platform, basically, and say, okay, I'm with you. I understand this.
I agree with you 100%. I think that's a wonderful idea.
I just think that basically if the Cato Institute can have a think tank, I don't know why Head-On can't have one.
Well, and the word Cato all in itself. Remember O.J.'s friend?
Yes. I tend to think of the Green Hornet, though. Or rather the Brown Hornet.
That's true, but I just think of the living Cato whenever they say the Cato think tank, and it kind of takes it down quite a few notches for me there.
And we can look at it another way, Cato from the Pink Panther.
Oh, that's true. That's true. And I want everyone to remember tomorrow there is a special program going on that will be brought to you by the Carpenters and Millwrights. It is coming from the Beckley County Armory, or actually the Raleigh County Armory, and it will be from 12 until 3. I hope everybody tunes in and listens.
What is the event that's going on down there, Agnes?
It's basically getting everybody together and being more out there so that people can know and understand what the unions are there for, what they're doing. It's going to be a really neat expo.
Okay, so this is a state union expo of some sort?
Yes.
Right.
So it's going to be really neat.
It sounds just like our kind of audience.
It's our wonderful audience. That's the thing. So I'm really excited. I can't wait to do this.
So Bob's laptop's taken the veritable crapper, I understand.
Yes, it's taken a hit, and I'm going to hand this off to you, David, John, David. You two go ahead and. You know, we were talking about think tanks, and David had a wonderful idea.
What was that? I was down getting coffee, and then I come up, and there's a message saying, "Can you log in?"
Yeah.
So fill me in, please.
Go ahead.
My idea, basically, John, was we should start a official head-on think tank that involves all of us as consultants, and we can have a proper outline or policy on all sorts of issues, and we can propose these to Kucinich and just people who think like-minded that we are of the situation and feel about the same issues that we do.
Doesn't sound like a bad idea. Now, the first thing when coming up with a think tank name, you have to come up with a name that says what it isn't, right? isn't that how this normally works? What would you consider calling this think tank? Did you have any ideas?
The head-on think tank.
Well, maybe that would be kind of good if Fox did these kind of things. You know, it's the Fox think tank on Fox News. At least then we'd know that at least to be openly biased. But think tanks have done an amazing amount of legwork over the last couple of decades in shifting the way public policy is debated. The type of legislation that comes down. I mean, we've seen just the way science has been denied just by effective think tanking.
Right, but the difference in this one is it's not evil.
I like the idea very, very much in concept, really. The question then is, do we end up... I'm always afraid of playing their game.
Yes.
You know what I mean? But I think you're right, and I think actually the Democrats as a party should be a bloody think tank with all their committees and other things that they have at their disposal. I mean, by default they should be, if they're actually representing the people, they should be doing a similar thing. And I wonder, aside from something like, Move On.
Right. Well, the reason why I suggested this is because I realized a lot of radio shows and a lot of op-ed pieces and blogs and whatnot, all of this stuff is great. And it's some of it is preaching to the choir and some of it's preaching to the audience. But at the same time, I think the next step is to take it further where you take it, it doesn't just go into the ether of the web or basically the libraries for the archives. It actually goes into the minds of these leaders of what we're saying, because we have no idea how powerful these ideas are and what kind of lasting impact they have until we address them to the people that we find will serve us the best.
Well, I definitely think you might be onto something there. I mean, because it has been the well-directed think tanks that have been able to re-steer the dialogue in so many things. I mean, the environment is my particular favorite one to go completely nuts on.
Right.
I think you're right. A concentrated effort where maybe we, Bob was talking yesterday about how the Republicans say that, the Democrats have no ideas, and how actually it's probably the Republicans that actually have no new ideas, but it's this use of projection constantly.
That's another reason why I mentioned that, because I think it's time that we do have a proper outline as progressives and whatnot. And I know we do. We do have it in some form. But what I'm saying is usually most of the progressives I know, they contain it and they insulate these ideas, and they're just talked about versus actually put to use.
Well, I also think that, you know, it would probably be a good idea to have, you know, one, two, maybe many of these type of think tanks to try and counter some of the airtime that all these right-wing think tanks get. Because, I mean, that's when I hear the term think tank, I think of a group of people that get together to try and put forward an idea that is not accepted by normal logic or science or political reasoning.
I think of it in a different way. I think that we can as the Republicans did, we can reclaim that word, reframe it, and mean it to make something positive and for normal progressive thinking citizens who can understand what we're saying.
Yeah, I definitely think it's a really good idea. And when I say that, when I say that, that's a knee-jerk reaction, just because every time, you know, 19 out of 20 times you hear think tank,
right,
on a newscast, it ends up being some guy that's completely up his own ass, completely out of touch with any kind of logic, just working a talking point and trying to back engineer the logic in which to move that talking point forward, which I just think is an absolute joke.
That's right. I just think that, like things like the Heritage Foundation and whatnot, I just think it's time for progressives to reclaim the lexicon as it is and the language and just reframe it to what we really think is important and positive, and not be destructive in anyone's in the broader sense of things. I mean, actually have like ideas that put forward something where we can bring them to these leaders and whatnot, and we can hammer it out, and maybe one of these ideas will spark off something.
I like the idea. I really, really, really like the idea. And again, like you say, you know, reclaiming the lexicon, you know, reclaiming the fact that a think tank can be not just a politically generated, aligned thing. It can be a place where ideas are, you know, fostered and fed and tried to then be turned into good policy. I'd love to see that. I would totally love to see that. And I appreciate you ringing in, first of all, helping hold down the fort while we got things figured out with Bob going off.
Oh, I didn't know anything about that. That was just common luck, I guess.
you're first in the queue, but I really appreciate you coming up with that idea, and I think we should talk about this further. I think, you know, maybe we should come up with a short list of people that we think would be good contributors to this think tank. I don't know, maybe put a little thought into that and return with some further ideas on it, because
I just think it's time people realize that progressives and Democrats and people like-minded like us do have a plan, and we can actually work something out where people will actually be more impressed than any Republican or conservative plan, and it won't just be some jingoistic car salesmanship. It'll have something with some meat actually to it.
Maybe then we'll come to, you know, people on both sides will come to see that our interests really, really are similar, and it's been the wedge issue politics and whatnot that have continually worked to divide us, to keep us from having the real conversations that we need to have, man.
Yeah, I agree completely.
So, David, thank you so much for ringing in. I'm going to move on because I want to get Jim in before we have to take our bottom of the hour break. So
okay.
Thanks for ringing in, man.
You have a good day, man.
Right on. Take care.
Later.
And I believe we got the one, the only Jim on line two. Is that correct?
I think so.
Hey, mate, how are you?
You need to cut your volume down, friend, because you're distorting terribly.
Oh, I will fix that. Okay, how are we doing? Better?
Reasonably well.
Ah, so what can I do for you today, sir?
Well, I don't understand this business of a think tank in terms of. The Cato Institute of the Heritage Foundation. I mean, these are very formalized organizations that have a lot of financial support and are highly structured and extremely effective in what they do. And I think that this is one of the reasons that the Republicans have been so successful, is the fact that they are so well organized, and they
absolutely
and they have cadres of people who basically have one function, that is to keep people in line with the party faithful. Now, the very nature of the liberal and the more factionalized groups is sort of inimical to that type of thinking. You know what I'm saying, I think.
Yes, I do.
In other words, the Republicans are much able to proceed in lockstep, whereas we proceed at route step, okay? What's so funny?
Well, no. It's very effective imaging. It's very, you know, and it is the fact that
I think along military lines in a situation like this. And what my
I agree with you.
And what I propose is this, that, you know, instead of considering the Republican playbook as anathema and excommunicate, I think it's something to be envied, admired, and copied, because it's the only way we're going to be successful in beating them at their own game.
I agree with you, and that, and you know, it's one of those things. Yes, their organization and focus is to be admired, for sure.
Yeah.
And
while we're talking, yeah, there are a couple of things, and I would appreciate the courtesy of your carrying me beyond the break if we go over. Okay.
Sure thing.
Okay. Thank you. Because I would like to collect my thoughts and not be racing against the clock.
Okay.
But I think that basically what we're combating here are a number of things. And, you know, we can laugh and joke about them because really the situation in the country has gotten so bad that, in deference to our youthful friend in Maine and his youthful exuberance, which I still wish I shared to a certain degree, all we can do is laugh. But unfortunately, it's not a laughing matter at all.
Absolutely not.
It's deadly serious. And I think what we're looking at is a generational thing as far as changes that have occurred in our government. I mean, I would assume as part of the so-called liberal left that we would like to see the pendulum swing back in the other direction as far as the role of government and things like this is concerned. I mean, since 1993, starting with the reinvention of government, the federal government has really been decimated in terms of assets. We're talking about men, or personnel. We're talking about funding. We're talking about lots of programs that have been cut, lots of staff that have been cut, that has made, example, agencies like FEMA almost, ineffective to the point of being ridiculous.
Absolutely, and even after, you know, I still have my problems with old Bill Clinton, but he actually really kind of brought FEMA up, and you can see how just by one administration going back to the same old thing, they were able to gut it in a very, very short period of time.
Well,
so,
you know,
Jim,
that even started with Clinton and Gore. As much as I like Bill Clinton and Al Gore, because one of the first things they wanted to do was to eliminate totally, in their reinvention of government pamphlet, the Army Corps of Engineers.
But they ended up making it a cabinet position, which actually ended up making the oversight of it better. I didn't realize that they wanted to kill it, but
they wanted to kill the Corps of Engineers. And when I saw that, and you know, because I was, you know, having worked into the belly of the beast, so to speak, and had been a federal employee, I saw all this stuff coming because it affected my job, okay?
Right. All right, Jim, hold that thought right there, because we're going to come up on this break.
Before you get
rolling into something. Agnes, why don't we go ahead and take the bottom of the hour break?
And thank you for your courtesy.
This is John Fox. That's all right, man. We're always courteous to our friends. So just hang tight there for a minute, Jim. This is John Fox filling in for Bob. You're listening. We'll be back with Jim right after this CFP.
The granola Ayatollah of canola. Charles Ford, founder of Grassoline Solutions, explains.
I just started writing rhymes while I was farming and doing the eco thing, so that's kind of how this all came about.
Ford spits the truth.
Now, Rudolph Diesel was no weasel, this we know to be true. He was an engineer and a humanitarian, too. He made it possible for us to drive on vegetable fuel. Nobody told me that, well, that's what I'm trying to do. It was back around the turn of last century when Dr. Diesel offered up this opportunity. Corn, soy, chicken, fats, and flour, flax, hemp, seed. Farmers could grow their own fuel, not only their feed. Small towns could be self-sufficient about their energy needs without drilling or spilling or paying a fee. It's like that.
Biodiesel reduces cancer-causing emissions by 75%. For more EcoWrap and all the 411 on biodiesel,
Grassoline.com. Check us out.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at CliffBar.com.
Lots of people talk about the ways that schools should inspire students to be creative. I'm Mary Chapin Carpenter. Business and education leaders say that young workers too often lack the creativity needed to remain flexible and excel on the job. Well, helping young minds tap their creativity is just as important as mastering math and English skills. When you look at today's educational landscape, one of the best places that creativity is actively encouraged is in music class. Music classrooms today are like deep wells of creative energy just waiting to be explored by young minds. Don't let it go to waste.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, Gibson Guitar, Baldwin Piano, and this station. March is Music in Our Schools Month. Music, part of a sound education.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
Alright, everybody, welcome back to Head On with Bob Kincaid. Sans Bob, unfortunately, today. John Fox filling in, keeping the seat warm. You know how it is. And when we went to break, we had Jim on line one, and I do hope he's still on hold and waiting to come back. Jim, you still with us?
Yes, sir.
All right, mate. Well, we were talking about think tanks and whatnot, and you were just you were talking about that you had worked in the belly of the beast, so
I've
to say,
worked
and
in
you
government most of my
were
life.
About to launch off.
And you know, and I've seen how it's been degraded over the years. And you know, a lot of the Republican objectives to really destroy the federal government have really had a lot of Democratic help, unfortunately. And, you know, they have. I mean, you know, Reagan didn't do what he did by himself in his years. And, of course, George Bush, strangely enough, Bush the elder, had a lot more respect for the civil service than some of the other Democrats did. He really did.
Yeah, you know, there are certain aspects of George the First that, you know, the guy still had somewhat of a soul in some ways, you know. I mean, he... When he was asked about going into Baghdad, he said, yeah, with whose kids?
Exactly. Because he's
you know,
the war.
And you're right.
Airplane.
Well, and also, from memory, and I, this is one of those things that still blows me away that I never hear talked about. I have ingrained in my memory from the first Gulf War that the UN had only approved pushing Saddam back behind his own borders.
That's true.
The U.S. was not given authority to even go into Baghdad. So that the whole thing about, you know, we should have finished the job. Well, we did finish the job. We did the job that the UN gave us the to do. And so where this whole where that whole part of the argument comes in, you know, about us having gone in and finished the job, I don't understand where that even comes from.
I don't either. But basically, I think George Bush the First had sense enough not to get himself attached to that tar baby called Iraq. You know, that's basically what it is, and the more we tried to wrestle with it, the more we've become ensnared in it. And, of course, look at the leadership we had in the first Gulf War, and look at the leadership we had in the second Gulf War. I mean, General Frank said he didn't even care about casualties. Those were his exact words. He didn't care.
I know. And my brother-in-law was a B-52 crew chief during the first Gulf War.
Right.
And I find it interesting that a guy, you know, and I don't really have any contact with him, just suddenly a few years ago, he suddenly decided to retire, go back to public life. And he's a smart guy, you know, he's like a certified Porsche mechanic. And, you know, he's no fool. And he was very into it in the first Gulf War, you know, respected, you know, you could tell that he respected his leadership. I sometimes, you know, I wish I could talk to him. I'd like to know what suddenly made this lifelong, you know, soldier who ended up taking over all of battle damage repair for the U.S. Air Force after his performance in the first Gulf War ended up retiring.
What created this epiphany for him?
I have no idea, but I often wonder.
But,
you know, I often...
Rhetorical question. Well, you know, what caused this epiphany in his life? Yeah, really. Almost like his experience on the Damascus Road. Where was he going? You know.
Yeah, and yeah. So.
But you know, getting back to what we were talking before, if I could, you know, I think of the damage that's been done and how much and what it's going to take to repair. A lot of the stuff the Republicans have done. It's going to take a long time. It's going to take beyond 2006 and 2008. And there's one thing I want to share with you, if I may, please.
Please.
Have you ever heard of an institution called Patrick Henry College?
Yes, I have.
Well, you know, one of their principal objectives is to get as many interns into the White House and into the federal system as they possibly can.
Oh, is that so?
And they're doing that. And the current administration is permitting their entry into these entry-level positions and presidential management interns. And White House interns, okay? You have a OPM house, what they call a PTI presidential, a PIT, presidential internship, program. And then, of course, they have White House fellows and White House interns as well. And they're trying to get as many of their graduates into that. And the people at Patrick Henry, and I say this with all due respect to them, okay? They are the new army of God, as they see it, the new army of the Christian extreme.
Oh, Lord.
Well, I mean, listen, now wait a minute now. You have to respect a person for what they believe. And I do. Mm-hmm. Because I can't expect them to respect me if I don't. But I mean, these people are very dedicated, and they may be dedicated to the point of being wrong, but I still have respect for the ability of them to achieve their intentions. I mean, I would have said the same thing of other political parties in history, in the past, and recognized their influence and their possible danger. Okay?
Okay, well, but
I'm not
going
to throw rocks at them because of theological things. Do you see where I'm coming from?
Well, I do, but what my question is then, you know, is it possible for someone who considers themselves, you know, part of the army of God or some sort of thing to be able to honestly separate their religion from their politics, especially when you put...
I don't think so, John, because...
And I don't think that you can completely separate it, but...
It's very hard.
You know, what is the...
It would be very hard for them to, I think, John.
And so here's my thing where I want to know where their intentions are driven from. And if they're...
Well, I'll tell you where they start with these kids. Most of them are homeschooled. And then they go from their homeschooling situation into Patrick Henry.
So all these new interns that are being flooded into the White House have very, very little social skills and have grown up in a bubble.
Basically, they have tried to keep them in a bubble. And they've tried to keep them away from the evils of the world. Their parents have. And they're trying to keep them basically either at home or doing work for the church and things of that nature. And then at their jobs. Now, on the Discovery Channel last week, there was an interesting program entitled The Army of God. And it's a well-documented movement. But, I mean, this is part of the current Republican administration's efforts to perpetuate itself beyond any election year, I think. You're going to have a number of people in positions of authority that, you know, that will have grown up through the ranks, and they're kind of like moles, okay? We'll just use that term, okay?
I mean, there are even people, they've been doing that in higher levels for decades. I mean, there were people, you know, post from Nixon's administrations that still ended up coming up in, you know, following Republican governments. And then even a couple of them, you know, kind of still floated around through Clinton's time. And so, yeah, I think that this is just another level of, unfortunately, trying to have too much influence on the political process.
But, you know, one thing, and I'll get off because I know there are other people who want to get on. I think what we need more than anything in the world, probably, would be another FDR. And here was a man who could take men from, I mean, when he assembled his first cabinet, he had people who had been in Hoover's administration. A person who was very ecumenical in his approach to a number of things, and a person who had a great deal of charisma, who would be able to, by the force and light of his knowledge and charisma, to be able to bind together the various interests of the Democrats and the more, you know, various groups, and to bring us into some form of lockstep, so that certain goals could be achieved, and some of the mistakes of the current regimes could be addressed, if not corrected or eliminated. I really think I'm calling upon the necessity of the unusual man with an unusual solution. So I'm just going to take that to take the, you know, diversity is a very powerful force, but it's going to have to be channeled if it's going to be effective.
I like that. An unusual man?
With
what was that?
An unusual solution.
I think you're spot on, Jim. I think you're spot on. We need leadership that can think us out of a paper bag, and we haven't had that in a long time.
And like I say, diversity is very powerful. And if you can take that diversity and you can channel it and take it out of many conduits and put it into one, you can achieve a force that's almost irresistible. And that's, we could do that. But it's a little discipline and hard work.
Absolutely. It takes discipline, but I want to avoid the concept of getting lockstep, because that makes me think about people doing things unthinking. And I want this to be where people do it in a manner that they are consciously thinking. And I think you're right. We do need someone like FDR
instead of lockstep, let's use the term algorithm, a predetermined set of instructions, which could, allow us to proceed in an orderly phase with symmetry. Because the whole efforts to dislodge the Republicans have been extremely asymmetrical.
Mm.
And
absolutely,
that's not going to work. It's going to have to be concentrated, and to punch through their armor, which they have encased themselves in, you're going to have an armor-piercing shell.
I think you're right, Jim. And you know, this conversation, like many others, ends up making me want to talk about quantum mechanics. But I'm going to not do that.
Okay.
If you haven't seen it, you need to see a film called What the Bleep Down the Rabbit Hole. And it talks about spirituality and science. And it's a very, very interesting film. It will change a lot of the ways that you think about things. But Jim, you always bring such great content into things, and we're running up on another break. So
I appreciate the time, and I didn't mean to go over and take so much time. And
No, man, this is conversation radio. We give as much time as it takes to let the thing develop, man. You know, as usual, you bring good stuff. And this idea of think tanks and taking some of the mechanics from the Republicans could be a good idea. It's just making sure that we never lose sight of the ideals that we're fighting for.
Well, you know, we control these things. They don't control us. And to a certain extent, they have allowed them to almost to control them. You just allow these institutions to control them.
You bet. Thanks, Jim. We're going to head to this break. Thank you very much.
I appreciate you.
And
have a good
night. Good night, mate.
Good night, sir.
Thanks, mate. And as we go out here to this break, I'm telling you, people, quantum mechanics. But they talk about we make our own reality. It's all very, very interesting stuff, and there's a lot to be said for it. But as I wait for some bumper music to kick in, we're going to take another break. Light up the phone lines for me, because I thought I was doing the news and nothing else, and now I'm here taking Bob's seat. So it's your show. The phone lines are open. Ring us up on 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. We'll see you after the break.
Ever been to a Gloria Estefan concert, you know that there are few stars who can match her presence, performance, and talent. The time Gloria first experienced the thrill of being on a stage performing for people was also one of the first times she learned to stretch her wings.
My fondest memory of music in school was when I was playing the clarinet. I played the clarinet from 5th to 8th grade in the school band. My mother was pretty strict and never let me go anywhere, but of course, since it was part of the school program, she allowed me to go to Tallahassee, the capital of our state here, on a competition with the school band. Of course, to me, this was incredibly exciting. It was the first time I was allowed to go out of my home without a parent. We had chaperones, but we went there, participated in a three-day program, and it was some of the most beautiful memories I have as a child.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
Been to the playground lately? If you have young children, you should take a look. Even though kids have been swinging and climbing and teetering for generations, playgrounds still manage to injure 500,000 kids each year. Check for hard landing surfaces, sharp edges, and broken equipment. Outdoor play is healthy for kids, but a playground that's unsafe and unsupervised can quickly become the pain ground. For more on playground safety, visit orthoinfo.org. A message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons.
Agnes, you rock with your music choices. Welcome back to Head On with Bob Kincaid. Bob's off tonight. John Fox keeping the seat warm. So the calls so far have been talking about think tanks. And maybe we need some of our own. Even maybe this network should start one, which is an interesting concept. And, you know, maybe we do need to... if the Democrats and our elected representatives aren't putting forth our ideas, perhaps we need to, you know, just like we're trying to do with this network, create a vehicle in which to get our message across the way we want it. And maybe then we can get some real legislation in place. You know, it's... When I was doing the news this morning, you know, there's reports that, you know, Rove may be indicted soon, you know, maybe they were meeting today or tomorrow. They're going to hold hearings into whether Bush is, you know, overstepping his bounds, which, I mean, you and I know that, you know, we don't need a hearing for that. So, but, you know, let's have a hearing. You know, it's a step in the right direction, but I want to know, you know, are these people going to be under oath, or is this going to be a sham like so many things that we've seen, you know, like, you know, games played during the 9/11 commissions and other things. And I've been getting personally really, really frustrated because so far the biggest crowds I'm seeing anywhere making the biggest noise are the people who aren't even citizens of our country yet. Yet. And I think that that's should be the operative word, yet. Because no matter what, you know, the right-wing noise machine wants to say, it's the illegal immigrant labor that the corporations want that create the entire situation. And so if these people have been coming over and working, paying taxes, all these other things, I'm sorry, I think that they probably have a step up on the average American, you know, when it comes to, you know, how much they support and how much they actually take. That's my opinion. But anyway, Agnes is telling me that we have Gene on line one. Gene, welcome to Head On.
Hey, John.
How are you doing, mate?
Oh, I'm okay.
Tell me, buddy, tell me.
Oh, it was just a long walk to find a grocery store, and lack of sidewalks and a lot of jazz, but that's not why I called.
Okay. Why did you call?
I want to comment on the think tank thing.
Please do.
I like the idea, but here's what concerns me. The Republicans, I'm sure, I'll talk slow so you can answer back. The Republicans, I'm sure, know, have thought this through, and they'll figure that we'll try and do something similar, and they're going to be laying for that as far as the actual mechanics of building one.
Oh, I would definitely think so, and it's usually kept, the opposition on the back foot from actually taking a full step up in some ways. So that could be a double-edged sword, that situation in a way. But I don't think we've actually stepped up and made a real attempt at this the way the Republicans have. Well, so until we make that step up,
yeah,
you know,
go ahead.
Well, you know, I'm thinking until we actually make that step up, instead of constantly, you know, hopping back on the back foot every time that they go boo, you know, if we get something really directed to get to go and hammer the message as hard as they hammer the lies, maybe we can make some progress. But at this point, we're in a situation where every time we look like we're going to do something like that, maybe the right-wing think tanks come out hammering, and we step back immediately before actually countering them. And this is where I think we need to grow a spine.
Okay.
On this,
I can agree with that. I'm, you know, between the think tank idea and what Jim had said with the, you know, the lockstep kind of deal, all I can see when he talks about it is V for Vendetta.
It's an inspiring film to view. I can't wait to go see it another couple times.
I did see it, which is, it was very interesting. I did like it, and it was really weird because after that I walked out and I was riding the Max home, and there was like a homeless grandfather and his grandson on there, and I was like, ew. I mean, not ew because they're homeless, but ew because they don't have a, you know. You know what I'm trying to say? In the sense of...
Go ahead. Say what you're trying to say.
What? I'm saying ooh because it's like they weren't really that old. I mean they were well-spoken. They were, you know, obviously fairly decently educated, but they had no home or appeared not to have a home. And that was...
So your reaction was to their situation, not them.
Yeah. It was like... I mean, that just gives me a chill, because I've seen that more and more in Portland, where you see families that are homeless, you know, and what would appear to be fairly well-off families, and they're, you know, they're asking me, who is low income and in a wheelchair, for money.
Yeah, well, you know, and see... You know, I used to have one view of the homeless until such time after I experienced actually being homeless myself. And thankfully, it was only for a very, very short time.
Yeah.
But I did have the experience of actually having no roof to go home to.
Yeah.
You know, whatever I carried with me was mine. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
And thankfully, I was able to get back on my feet again within a matter of a few short weeks. But ever since then, when I see someone homeless on the street, I take a step back and I think about when I was there, and I know how, you know, I mean, I've never taken a penny of unemployment in my life. You know, none of that, right? I have survived as best I could always and by my means. And I have been in that situation, and it puts a complete new light on it. And that, I think, is an idea right there that needs to be pushed forward. Instead of being repulsed by the homeless person, which is something that I think we've been geared to connect the homeless with a criminal, with this or with that, as opposed to being upset about the situation that they are in our modern, supposed advanced society.
Yeah. Homeless people in and of themselves don't necessarily bother me, you know, but the idea, because I always, that's, now we're talking that's in the back of my mind. That's one of my biggest fears. Like, ooh, I'm on low income and I'm on disability and I worry about things being cut and then what am I going to do and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And it,
you're right.
It worries me because these were people that seemed like they were, you know, like I say, well-spoken and didn't appear to have a disability, and yet they looked like they, you know, they got off at Pioneer Square and they kind of hung out with the homeless, and it was just kind of disconcerting. Anyway, but I like the think tank idea. It's just we got to do this. We got to do this so that we got to. I suppose what I want to say is we need to study them more to see how to get by their tricks and all that jazz. And I'll let somebody else get on, but I just had to throw it in.
No worries, Gene. Thanks so much for ringing in. Thank you so much. It's always good to hear from you. And you take care of yourself.
Bye-bye.
All right, mate. Now, I think we're actually a little late for going to our top of the hour break. So, Agnes, go ahead and run that bumper music. And you're listening to Head On Radio with Bob Kincaid, John Fox keeping the chair warm. And we'll be back straight after the news taking your calls. It is Conversation Radio. Seriously, folks, ring up. It's your show tonight. So light up those phone lines. We'll see you on the other side of the break.
Radio Network News, I'm John Fox. Al-Qaeda terrorist Zacharias Moussaoui should spend the rest of his life in prison for his role in the September 11, 2001 attacks on the United States. The 9 men and 3 women returned their verdict on the 7th day of deliberations after reliving the September 11 attacks through weeks of harrowing testimony and evidence. Jurors were stone-faced as the lengthy verdict was read in court. Spectators, including some of the 9/11 family members, fell silent as Moussaoui showed no immediate reaction. Moussaoui stated as he left the courtroom, "America, you lost. I won." Federal investigators posing as senior citizens found that Medicare's operators routinely failed to give callers accurate and complete information about the government's new drug benefits, prompting Democratic critics of the Bush administration program to again request an extension of an approaching enrollment deadline. The investigators said that about one-third of their calls resulted in faulty responses or no response at all because of disconnected calls. The accuracy rates varied a great deal based on the question, but when it came to one of the most important questions, operators provided the right answer only 41% of the time. Shortly after taking office, Vice President Dick Cheney fought to take over one of the National Security Advisor's key duties, claims an unnamed ex-official in the June issue of Vanity Fair. At one point early in the Bush administration, a former official tells me, Cheney wanted to chair meetings of the National Security Council, quote, principals, unquote. The Secretary of State and Defense, the CIA director, and so on, in Bush's absence, co-opting the usual role of the National Security Advisor, then Condoleezza Rice, writes Vanity Fair's national editor Todd Purdom in an advance copy provided by the magazine to Raw Story. The House approved criminal penalties and fines up to $150 million Wednesday for energy companies caught price gouging as lawmakers responded to public anger over high gasoline prices and huge oil industry profits. The legislation, receiving broad bipartisan support, passed 389-34 and must now be considered by the Senate. But a proposal aimed at making it easier to expand or build refineries fell short, 237-188. It needed two-thirds approval to pass under special House procedures. The U.S. Postal Service said Wednesday it wants to raise the price of a first-class stamp by 3 cents to 42 cents and proposed a forever stamp that people could use as a hedge against future rate increases. A forever stamp would help ease the transition to any future price adjustments. The Forever stamp would help soften the blow of a rate increase by allowing customers to stock up. As originally proposed, it would sell for the first-class rate, and once purchased, the special stamp would remain valid for whatever the first-class rate is when it is used, regardless of future increases. This is the news on the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
The major record labels say that downloading music from the internet is stealing, stealing, stealing. But according to these people, making a mixtape for your friend is stealing too. So is making a tape of a radio show?
Home radio. We play the songs that sound more like everyone else than anyone else.
When a rock band plays an AC/DC cover at a bar that doesn't pay ASCAP? That's stealing. Or have you ever sung Happy Birthday to your friend at a restaurant?
Warning! Warning!
Happy Birthday is copyrighted, so if you're singing in a public place, you'd better be paying royalties, or you'll be stealing music.
Man down!
Does all this stuff about stealing music sound absurd? Would you rather have a world where our music culture wasn't the intellectual property of five corporations? Then stop giving them your money, and make sure your friends and family don't either. Better yet, try burning them a CD. If we pull the plug on major labels, music gets better. Find out more about what you can do. Check out downhillbattle.org.
Boston.com reports, the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, accusing the White House of a, quote, very blatant encroachment, unquote, on congressional authority, said yesterday he will hold an oversight hearing into President Bush's assertion that he has the power to bypass more than 750 laws enacted over the past 5 years. Republican Arlen Specter said, quote, there is some need for some oversight by Congress to assert its authority here, unquote. He continued, quote, what's the point of having a statute if the president can cherry-pick what he likes and what he doesn't like, unquote. Specter said he plans to hold the hearings in June. He said he intends to call administration officials to explain and defend the president's claims of authority, as well to invite constitutional scholars to testify on whether Bush has overstepped the boundaries of his power. Raw Story reports, a one-sentence item in the ABC News political report, The Note, hints the CIA leak jury is meeting today. The grand jury investigating the CIA leak may meet this morning at the federal courthouse in Washington, D.C., The Note says. The ABC report is one of the most popular go-to roundups for Washington insiders. No other details are available. The report could not be independently confirmed. Recent reports suggest the jury will continue to meet in the next 2 weeks as they decide the fate of presidential advisor Karl Rove. Rove's lawyers have been told the decision on whether to indict him for obstructing justice in the investigation of the outing of CIA agent Valerie Plame Wilson will be made within weeks. Raw Story also reports MSNBC confirms outed CIA agent Valerie Plame Wilson was working on Iran. This is the news on the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network. From Sydney, I'm John Fox.
Liberal Sandbox and your Head-On with Bob Kincaid.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Head On with Bob Kincaid. Bob's not here tonight, but you're stuck with John Fox, coming to you from Sydney, Australia, doing my own news. That was kind of surreal. think tanks. Okay. Think tanks. It's an interesting concept. Maybe it is something that we need to look into doing, you know? We know that those of us in current opposition are the ones that have the ideas. We know this. And our ideas are not moving forward. And, you know, when Jim rang earlier, he said, you know, the Republicans didn't do this without help from the Democrats. And that happens to be another one of those subjects that I rant and rave about, is the fact that both sides of politics have been completely corrupted through money. I mean, we know this, and why we're not doing anything to change it, I don't understand. Because we've got politicians on both sides that are definitely holding their interests for concerns other than the average American. The whole lobby system has corrupted us so badly. And I wasn't going to get into the quantum mechanics thing, but I'm sorry. This stuff all, to me, applies. You know, they talk about in quantum mechanics and quantum physics that you create your own reality. And that reality is actually influenced just by the participation of observation. So, you know, there have been studies done where they did this in Washington, D.C. They brought in a few thousand mystics and things into D.C. and had them basically meditate on the idea to bring crime down. And they said that they would be able to bring the crime rate down in D.C. by 25%. And the police chief at the time said the only reason that you could do that, the only way that you could do that would be for 4 feet of snow to land. It's impossible. Well, sure enough, within months of having these people actually concentrate on bringing the crime rate down, the crime rate dropped by 25%. And then suddenly the D.C. police got involved and actually started to fund the study. So this is where the concept of you creating your own reality, and this is maybe where the think tank has to come in. We need to concentrate these ideas in a way that we can then project them out into the masses so that more people latch on to a new reality, that what is going on now shouldn't be the reality we live in. They have created this current reality of fear, torture, war, corruption. And they have created the reality that allows them to get away with it because we have opted into that reality. And we need to, as a mass, which means every single individual, grab onto our new reality, which used to be reality, which is where our society actually cared for its own people, its actual workers. You know, this is one of the, and I think Joe Vecchio's thing on an international workers' rights standard plays right into this. Because I honestly get a little tired of when I hear the debates going on here in Australia or in America about things like over jobs and competition and whatnot. In America, here it's, you know, it's about American jobs, you hear over here. It's Australian jobs. Well, you know what? It's about everybody's jobs. Everybody's jobs. And we got to stop finding ways of cutting corners on somebody else, thinking that it's just going to make us be better off. So I'm going to end this little silly rant. And I do believe we have Andy from the Netherlands on the line. Andy, you're head on.
Hi.
Hey, mate, how are you?
How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing fine. Getting into the swing of things. What can I do for you, sir?
I have a kind of a question about the whole Moussaoui trial.
Okay, please.
Something that's been bugging me about it. Just laid awake like a whole night just thinking about it. And I didn't really know how to put it into a simple words, but I did manage to put it into a simple question. And that's the following. Why does that Moussaoui character get a trial and the other people in Guantanamo do not get a trial? Or whatever they may be accused of.
It's a really good question. And considering the fact that with all of the spying and wiretapping and everything that's gone on, this is the only person that has been brought up to trial.
Yeah.
And, you know, it seemed like they were going to get this guy, you know, come hell or high water or evidence. Now, I'm not saying that the guy was not involved, and I haven't been able to follow it in massive detail, but I did notice scanning through today that there are some reports saying that, you know, the case wasn't all that massively solid, and this guy could have been actually drumming up his own horn.
Yeah, but did you say that the trial was to gather evidence?
No, but some of the evidence in the trial wasn't all that solid, you know?
Okay.
That they, you know, I mean, there was a case, but,
yeah, but
you know.
Yeah, but the case is for everybody in Guantanamo, or,
This is a huge question, mate. I mean, why is it that, yeah, very, very good question. Why is it that we have this, you know, kind of seemingly theatrical one trial going on,
yeah,
and yet all the other supposed, you know, participants have no rights, no trials, no representation, no due process.
Yeah, that's...
And I think you're posing a really good question, and I don't have an answer for you. And just to tell you, we've been having our first terrorist trial down here in Australia, and some guy who cut a deal with the U.S. government testified via satellite link here against this guy, and I had never heard anything about this other chap either, and I really want to look it up, because it wasn't Moussaoui.
Yeah.
And this was a guy that supposedly had connections with Al-Qaeda, blah, 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 involvements in a couple of things, and ended up getting a deal where it was like 2 years, and this concern, doubt comes from the same place I think, you know, your question comes from. It seemed to me they said he was going off on another stop, like this guy was somehow now the media whore of the turncoat Al-Qaeda guy. And he was going to go testify at another trial somewhere else after he did this one here.
Okay.
All by satellite link. And it all just sounds very, very bizarre to me.
Yeah.
You know, and then just recently we had the video of one-legged what's-his-name marching with his troops. How much of this is, you know, how much of this is actually theater? Could that be the question that you're asking? How much of this is actually just theater?
That was my theory, really. Is it just yet another reason to think that the whole 9/11 thing is just a theater for mass consumption, for media play?
Well, I definitely think that there's a lot to be said for that, because...
Well, there's no logical reason that Moussaoui person would be the only one that would get a trial, and the others do not.
Yeah, and, you know, he's had an unbelievable amount of time to grandstand as well, I would think. That's just been my impression from here.
Yeah. Well, I think it stinks, and... Well, I think the whole terrorism threat thing is just a load of BS, really. And
I'm with you there. I'm totally with you there.
It doesn't
make
sense to me.
It makes absolutely zero sense. And everything that, you know, the U.S. administration has done supposedly to combat it has had the exact opposite effect, and everyone knew it would have the exact opposite effect. You know, so I mean. You know, it tends to make any kind of thinking person have to believe that, you know, there's something not right about what they're telling us about this. And this is why, you know, I don't know if you caught a couple weeks back on Fourth Estate Radio, we held a 9/11 open mic night.
Yeah.
You know, because that film Loose Change had just been circulating the net and whatnot, and so, you know. The question was up in people's minds, you know, it feels like the Warren Commission again where, you know, what they're telling us just doesn't add up. And we have a right to be suspect of the results when you add all the factors in. You know, the Saudis couldn't be investigated. You know, we had the flights of Saudi royal family members out on the days.
Lots of people.
You know, it goes
preferential treatment with everything.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know, let's not forget about, you know, the WMD expert from the UK who ended up supposedly killing himself in a park in the lead up to this thing. You know, let's not forget that the outing of Valerie Plame ended up killing the operation that would have stopped the London Underground bombing.
Yeah.
You know, everything they have done has not added up to actually fighting a real terrorist threat. So I think the whole thing's bogus myself. I think it's very Big Brother, the whole thing.
That's what I think, too, and... You know, what do you do about it? I don't have that answer, but I really think the answer, as far as you know, who's to blame for all the terrorism, is quite clear, and that's criminal elements within the governments all across the world.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know,
the government itself, but it's just networks of criminals. Really, you know, high-class criminals who want to take a...
High-class criminals, in other words, you're saying big business.
Well, you know, high-class, not people who rob at gunpoint, but who let other people rob for them at gunpoint, so to speak.
Right, right.
What I mean.
Right. Oh, I'm totally with you, man. And just to ask... you know, I mean, I was dragged down here by an ex-wife. What? You're obviously an American, I believe, living in the Netherlands.
No, I'm actually I am Dutch, but I grew up in the United States. My father.
Okay, that
I stayed for a while.
Oh, okay. That just the accent was very, very nondescript American.
Oh.
Yeah. That's weird to me.
I do have. kind of, but you're kind of breaking up.
Sorry about that, man. Sorry. But I appreciate you calling in, and
okay.
You know, it's very, very strange.
You know, I don't,
times
that the question of tinfoil hat conspiracy. Garbage.
No,
it's just, you know, that kind of stuff happens all the time in government. Only this time, it is a huge scale.
Yeah. It's normally, there's no theory about it.
Normally, it's just within certain areas within a nation state, but this time it's just an international network of people who are conspiring to, I guess, take over the world or at least.
Well, see, this is where I say things about international corporates, because via World Bank rules and whatnot. You know, international corporations can just override, you know, any nation's environmental laws, worker rights laws, and they can just go right underneath it. And so, you know, it used to be business and capitalism. You know, Joe Vecchio talks about laissez-faire capitalism, and I think we are moving toward this international feudalist type of situation. And these are all signs of that.
I think we've been in that always, really. But, you know, especially the United States has had a huge, you know, economic welfare. And it's starting to crumble now. I mean, things are different here in Europe. I don't know what it's like in Australia. But people don't tend to be all that wealthy, not even the middle class. But in the United States, I remember living there. I mean, people living in huge houses with, I don't know, like, 4 or 5 or 6 car garages, and these were like middle class people, but I mean, you don't have that over here.
No, unfortunately, Australia, I think, is lost in a bit of its own bubble at the moment. But this place really confuses me sometimes, man. I have to say, for all their being cluey and everything, I sometimes think that they like the little bubble that they live in and like to live in denial of what actually goes on. And John Howard himself has put Australian troops in 10 conflicts since he's been in office, all for maximum media effect, which is playing the same plan. Sorry, I was looking at a communication from the home studio, but man, thanks for ringing in. I do believe that we're coming up on getting close to a break, not quite yet, but the think tank thing is interesting, and we just got to get a grip on things.
Thank you for answering my questions and taking my call. And if I ever call in again, I'll be sure to pose difficult questions for you.
No, I think you posed a hard enough one, man, to start with. Thanks very much.
Okay.
Right on, man. Have a good night.
You too. Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Wow, from like one end of the marble to the other end. That's kind of interesting. Before we head on to this break, please, folks, light up the phone lines for me because, you know, I am not prepared for doing this today. We actually have Jim hanging on line too, but we have our Cup of Joe report coming up. So why don't you get that queued up, Agnes? We'll take our break, do the Cup of Joe, have our bottom of the hour break thingy, and come straight back and get to Jim right after we come back. So you're with John Fox here on Head On with Bob Kincaid. Bob's been chopped off at the knees by a PC or something. And we'll do our best to have him back on tomorrow night. To get in on the conversation, you ring 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. We'll be straight after the Cup of Joe. A little bit of a break. See you on the other side.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. Yesterday, millions of immigrants across the nation, mostly Hispanic, took to the streets to protest the resentment that's growing against them. I, for one, applaud their courage and stand with them. It's easy for us to blame others when times are hard and you're one of those at the bottom of the pile competing for scraps. I work with a lot of black people who work very hard for not nearly enough money, in my opinion, and I've heard more than a few of them speak in less than kind words about those Mexicans. Whenever I hear someone say that, I point out that blaming the Mexicans is just wrong. The Mexicans are doing what they can, what they need to do to survive. Any one of us would do the same thing in their position. As I'm so fond of saying, in a global economy, there are no immigrants. Sniping among ourselves only helps the powers that be, the ones that helped create the mess in the first place, and who have every incentive to perpetuate it. As a capitalist, I believe that we have the right to bargain collectively to determine the value of our labor. But we can't do that effectively when we're busy pointing fingers at each other. We ought to be fighting to raise the standard of living for all of us. The American South lured businesses their way with lower standards and wages, and now those businesses are moving elsewhere to pay even less. And so on until we have slaves, not workers. But despite what Ayn Rand says, it's the workers who are the motor of the world. Without us, no one makes money. Now get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show via streaming audio every Saturday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Head On Radio Network.
You know, the president came out and talked about the Iraq War and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard. We could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
She had to go like 3 miles out of her way because Bush was there visiting. And he had his whole entourage and Secret Service, and they were blocking off the road, the highway that she has to take to get to work.
The Bush got you down? Let Grace and Rama Homebodies get you up every Sunday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern right here on the Head On Radio Network and homebodies.ramabahama.net. We'll trim the mess for you.
Welcome back to Head On. That's nice, Agnes. That was lovely. Welcome back to Head On with Bob Kincaid. You have John Fox hanging with you today. Before we get to Jim, who's rung back online too, I just wanted to give a little news from down here. You all are aware of the two gold miners trapped in the gold mine in Tasmania. Were located as alive after 6 days of being trapped underground in a small metal cage. The actual drill to extract them began last night. Once they realized that the place was somewhat secure for them, they were able to take their time and look for the safest options possible, moved some, I think it was 5 or 10 tons of equipment, had to pour a new concrete slab to mount the equipment on. The guys have been sent iPods and a digicam down to help keep them occupied. And still, you know, just in Aussie fashion, the reply is, you know, get me the out of here. So we hope to be hearing about them getting out very, very soon. But let's get back to the phones. Jim, you've rung back. What got under your bonnet?
Yeah, hi. Listen, Agnes said the switchboard wasn't too crowded, and you said you were speaking extemporaneously, which I think you're doing a very good job for having those.
Well, I want to slightly apologize to Andy. I got a little lost, but it's because I got tangled up in my own headphone cord, and I was trying to play it off, but I didn't do a very good job.
Well, I mean, during the middle of that speech, I had a Windows update come in, and when those knocks on the door come, I always answer them because generally if I don't, I have problems, you know. So, I mean, I had to lose you there for a while to restart my system.
Ah.
But one other thing I wanted to just, who was it? Someone said that they saw the Bush in his cavalcade somewhere. Was that just the most recent remark or something?
Ooh.
Whatever.
That was actually, you might have caught the end of the Grace and Rama promo, and that was from one of their shows where a friend of theirs had to go way out of their way to get to work because Bush and his whole entourage were there, and it completely inconvenienced her out of, you know, it was miles out of her normal route.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, I used to work at Andrews Air Force Base, and I could see all that phenomenon as it came into the base, either Marine One or the line of black cars coming down the Suitland Parkway through Anacostia into East D.C. And it was
right.
A mess, really. But, you know, I was just thinking about something here, and this is a quantum leap of what we've been talking about, and it's the role of America and what America's been doing and not really thinking about some of the contingencies and some of the bad things that, you know, we've visited some pretty bad things on some parts of the world. For whatever reason, mm-hmm. We're giving the world. And, you know, that's a two-way street. And, you know, it would appear to me that we need as many friends as we possibly can. Now, the way these people have been treated at Guantanamo or Gitmo, treated without civil rights, treated without due process, has not made us very popular. And, of course, have not presented us as being the shining bastion of freedom that we would like to see ourselves as portrayed as such. But, you know, I want to point out something that's just, you might think I'm nuts, and tell me if you think so, okay?
Okay.
You know, this country is susceptible to a lot of things. And I'm talking about natural disasters. And, you know, America, you know, could find itself in a very bad way very quickly. I mean, and I was just reading a report by a volcanologist and seismologist the other day.
Mm-hmm.
About, for example, in the Azores, there is an island there that's on a volcano. It's on a tectonic plate where two tectonic plates meet. And if this thing slides, it could cause a tremendous landmass and create a tsunami that would cross the Atlantic in 8 hours. And when it reached the shores of New York City and Washington and other eastern cities, it would be approximately 100 meters in height. That's over 300 feet.
Or, that's huge.
Now, you can think, if you think that what happened in your part of the world was something, a tsunami that would take 8 hours to cross, and when it reached or flung itself upon the shores of the North American continent, 300 feet high, what would it do? And where would we be? Or, if, for example, as we move across the country, you take Old Faithful, the geyser there?
Yes.
That's one of the most active volcanoes in the world. As a matter of fact, according to volcanologists, and according to the seismologists have said about what I just mentioned, not if, but when. And they're saying the same thing about Yellowstone. They said it could be worse than Krakatoa.
Really?
Really.
Wow.
It is
wow.
Active. And, you know, it's just a matter, and they're not saying it. They're not saying if, just when. Or, look at the Hayward faults and the San Andreas faults as they meet around the Bay City area.
Right.
What would happen if those things were to, I mean, we could literally see the entire physical sculpture of the North American continent changed overnight.
Oh, absolutely. But, I mean, this is something we've kind of always faced.
I mean, this,
well, no, that might make people think about science, Jim. You know, I mean, this is like actually talking about science. And that might actually lead people to have realizations in other aspects of science and nature. So I'm not surprised that we don't hear about this kind of thing, but I mean, what should we be talking about?
I think what we should be talking about is this. You know, we are all mortal. We are all, it's just like John F. Kennedy once said, we are all mortal, and we are all interested in the safety of our children. And we should all be interested in the brotherhood of man, and perhaps place ourselves in the position that if we needed a friend, the friend would be there. Because, I mean, you know, we have spent so much blood and treasure on things that are not worth it, that those resources are not going to be there when we need them, when we're really going to need them. And we're not going to have the friends. We're going to have people in other parts of the world saying, well, they got what they deserve.
Well, yeah, I have to agree with you there. You know, for a long time, the United States was, you know, hashing out some pretty bad karma there over and over to a lot of places in the world, and it never, you know, it never came back to haunt us, you know. And I have to say that, you know, when the planes first hit the World Trade Center before I, you know what I know now, part of my brain said, you know, been asking for this.
Well,
I don't
know
how they did.
Right. But, you know, what happened in New York City at the World Trade Center complex, and it was very tragic. Indeed, it was tragic. And what happened in D.C. was very tragic. And the people at Shanksville, Pennsylvania, who brought down that plane, I guess, will just give Flight 93 the honor it's due. As a matter of fact, I used to I used to spend a good deal of time in New York and used to have dinner on top of the World Trade Center, and I used to really enjoy that part of New York City. It was just really nice.
Well, yeah, I got my degree in Greenwich Village at the Institute of Audio Research, grew up in Jersey.
You know, the Court of Honor there and everything, the Sphere, and I mean, it was just an incredible place to be. And when I think about all that grace and beauty lost in the canyons of Manhattan, it makes my heart weep. However, when I see what happened in other cities in the world in past wars and things like Coventry, London, parts of the Soviet Union, Leningrad, Moscow, Kiev, and other cities, Warsaw, and you think of the people that they lost to the physical destruction that occurred there, what happened here is really almost nil.
Absolutely. And imagine,
Or look at Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
It also goes to prove how coverage of it has such an effect on the memory, because you know if these other tragedies had gotten anywhere near the kind of blanket coverage that you know the numbers who died on 9/11 you know have gotten. You know, it would show some of that balance. Because, yes, when you put it up against what other people have suffered, it is small.
I mean, when you look at Dresden, for example. Now, Dresden was a virtually undefended city. And it was basically untouched before February of 1945. And dear old Bomber Harris, our good old English friend who loved to just drop bombs everywhere, turned that city into a raging inferno. And, you know, and... You know, I just wish to God, and having, you know, been a part of some of this stuff in my career and things like that, I just wish that we could, if only we could turn some of this destructive force that seems to dog humanity and channel it into more productive means, what a much better world this would be. And I think karma would be much, I think our planet would probably ease off of us some. We might not have those. We might not have some of those earthquakes. I don't know.
I was in the very, very same thing after I got off the line with you the last time. I did get a little bit into a quantum mechanics kind of blabber. I don't know if you caught that. But
I enjoyed it very much.
And this is why I think this subject happens to be engrossing Gail and I at the moment, because it so... explains, let's theology and science help explain one another. And I think that is a massive leap towards saving us from a lot of the generated strife that we're in now. And what's interesting is the only religious organization to come out against this research and particularly this film have been the fundamentalist Christians. Virtually all other major religions have gone to the producers and said, this is what we've been teaching for years.
Now, which film is this?
It's called What the Bleep Do We Know?
Okay, I'm not familiar with it.
You can get it on Netflix, and the newer version, which is a longer director's cut, is called What the Bleep Down the Rabbit Hole. Because it's a film like nothing you've ever seen before, Jim. And I would suggest viewing it. Our good friend Peter, as you know, is a very, very religious man, a Christian. And he went and ordered the film, and he came back and he says, I loved it, because the science didn't threaten his spirituality; it only reinforced it. And it showed where the division between the two now is keeping us from actual understanding what God may actually be. And one of the things that one of these people says that I absolutely loved is that if this God is so wonderful and so powerful, how can us, one single carbon unit, ever sin against a power that strong?
This I'll have to see. And what went down the rabbit hole?
Yeah, you can actually find it at whatthebleep.com.
The bleep, is that an expletive or something?
Well, yeah, it's B-L-E-E-P. The actual title of the film when they were working on it is actually an expletive in there, what the f do we know, which is actually what the whole process of the film was we claim to know so much, but quantum mechanics is showing us something different that shows us just the limitless possibilities.
Oh, yeah.
And so maybe we really don't know anything. And until we make this leap in understanding of how things work at this quantum level, we're never going to get anywhere. But thanks for ringing, mate. We need to take a break, and I thank you for ringing back, because I go see this. All I have to say is find the DVD of this film and watch it, and you'll want to watch it over and over and over, because there's so much information. It's just a wonderful resource.
All right, will do. Thank you.
All right, mate. Thank you so much for ringing back in again.
All right.
We're going to take a...
Take care.
Okay, take care, mate. We're gonna take a break real quick, and when we come back, we've got Luke on line one. So, Agnes, go ahead and run us some bumper there. And keep the phone lines lit, people. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. This is John Fox sitting in for Bob. We'll see you in a bit.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs? Sure about that? Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh?
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Hello, can I ask a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Oh, it's gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
May I help you?
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
Oh, it's not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Oh, okay. Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing. It's not an option. It's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
Been to the playground lately? If you have young children, you should take a look. Even though kids have been swinging and climbing and teetering for generations, playgrounds still manage to injure 500,000 kids each year. Check for hard landing surfaces, sharp edges, and broken equipment. Outdoor play is healthy for kids, but a playground that's unsafe and unsupervised can quickly become the pain ground. For more on playground safety, visit orthoinfo.org. A message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons.
Welcome
Welcome back to Head On, folks. John Fox here, sitting in for Bob Kincaid. Running on empty. What are you trying to tell me, Agnes? I do hear the phone lines are filling up, but before we go to Luke, I just want to read just a little bit. I have my copy of What the Bleep in my hand. Hear that? That's a DVD case. Anyway, just from the back of the original film, it says, ask yourself, why do we continue to make the same mistakes? Why are we having the same relationships, getting the same jobs over and over again? Is this infinite sea of potential? How come we keep creating the same realities? There are scores of reasons why we do it. So we're conditioned to our daily lives, so conditioned to the way we create our lives, that we buy the idea that we have no control at all. Whatthebleep.com. And that's enough of that. Luke, you're head on.
Hi, John. How you doing?
Good, man. I'm doing good. How are you?
Well, I was doing good until I was watching the news. And every time you watch the news, it's going to get you just for the fun of it.
You got the bottle of Melancid sitting right next to the remote, do you?
Well, it's one of those things. I got sitting here, and I was watching the Lehrer News Hour. And, you know, you usually get good news off of him. But it's kind of
yes.
It's news that most people don't sit there and put it all together. I was sitting there, and they were talking about, I wrote it down because I'm bad about forgetting things sometimes. But they were talking about this thing with the Medicare.
Yes.
Most people. One thing I've noticed is when they talk about the Medicare problem, they don't talk about how this thing was sold. Because when this thing was sold to us, they were said, "Oh, it's going to be $350-400 billion." They said tonight it's $1.9 trillion so far.
Yeah, it's completely blown out, and people are paying more for their medications from everything I've heard.
Oh, and they still haven't got it fixed. I mean, they were talking to this elderly lady, and it's like the 15th is when the deadline supposedly is to sign on to it, and they still haven't got it fixed. You know what I mean? She's trying to sign on and made absolutely no sense to her and didn't have all the information and all that.
Well, yeah, and I reported in our newscast that like over half the calls to the hotline are given wrong information by Medicare, and they had investigators ringing up and you know claiming to be elderly people, and were just getting a complete runaround if they weren't just completely disconnected.
Oh yeah, well the thing I was talking about was going to talk about was more waste because they were also talking tonight about this thing in Mississippi, where they're going to pay $700 million to move a railroad line. They're talking about earmarks in the spending bills. They're going to pay $700 million to move a railroad line. That's fine. It's
what?
Well, it had a little damage from the hurricanes, but they fixed it. It works just fine. They just want to move it. Because apparently where they're going to move it from is something that the casinos want.
Oh, right. How is eminent domain playing in this? Is it?
Well, it's not really, but the thing of it is the thing is that you got is you got Lott and this other Republican named Cochran, and between the two of them, they've ramrodded this thing through the Senate. They got it through by like one vote. So it's just interesting. I'm sitting there doing that. Then, let me go on for one other. I'm sorry to kind of jump a little bit.
Please do.
I was sitting I check your all site and I look at Air America, you know, just see what's going on in the world. And the lead story on the Air America news thing was they were talking about our small little embassy in Iraq, $592 million, 80 football fields, I think is what they said. And I was sitting there and I just wrote all these things down, okay? $700 million for this stuff in Mississippi, $592 million for a embassy, which we swear we're not going to be staying, you know what I mean? You know, it's not permanent. No. And then, like, say, there you've essentially overcharged, like, $1.5 trillion on the Medicare. Imagine what happened if you took all that money and put it together. You could start the rebuild on New Orleans.
No kidding. How many college educations could you pay with it? I mean, like,
it's amazing the way that, I mean, they're just spending money like it's an open sieve.
Oh man, they're like drunk sailors. That's the image that I always get. You know,
you know what I want though. Someday I want a commercial where it's a teenager with a credit card just going out buying everything, and then somebody's sitting there looking at the parent going, said, you know, essentially, you know, why are you letting the child do this? You know, or something like that. And then you turn around and you see how much they're letting the Congress spend on their credit card.
Right.
And that's what I had to say. Yeah. That's the bill our kids are going to have to pay.
And it's like, well, you set the example. This is how you do it.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That would be a good commercial, I think, for the Democrats. Would be run something like that. You know, so show some kid out there running out, you know, running up bills, and then his parents jumping on him, turn around and going, well, that's what they're doing, you know.
All right, horn staff and move on staff, get right in those scripts. I'll record and produce it, no problem.
But if you put it in those kind of terms to them, you know, would you let your kids do what they're doing in Congress?
Absolutely. If the kid actually did this, it would come back on him, ruin his record, and he would have no way to get out of it except for, you know, pay his debts and do whatever. But you have people who are supposedly representing us, and they do this all day long, and they're going to get away with it, and who's going to pay the bill? The creditor. Us.
Well, it's one of those things. It's like, say, I've said a couple different times, I said, you know, I hope we do win. You know what I mean? In this year and in 08, but you know what? We're going to have to make some really harsh decisions that people aren't going to like.
Our party has to have a serious look at itself. I mean, and I'm saying that being an independent, but I want the Democrats to actually be my leading party. You know, they should be. I shouldn't have to feel like I need to be an independent at this juncture, but I can't sign on as a Democrat because right now they're not doing their job.
Well, now I'm going to ask you, since you know about this, didn't they just have this thing down in Australia where you all just paid off all your all's debt, where the government, you know what I mean, essentially just finished paying off all the debt and you all are essentially even right now?
Well, it all depends on how you add it up. Now, John... John Howard, I'll explain to you in short form.
Okay.
John Howard came in, and yes, a previous labor government went on a spending spree. Mm-hmm. Okay, they got into office, and everybody went okay, and didn't think about it. Right, they had the right ideas, but they just went way too fast, way too much. So then Howard's guys get in and get really, really serious about getting the budget under control, which they did. But they did it in two ways that I don't like. They did it by tax breaks to the richest and by cutting public services. And you can see with the condition of our hospitals, the way the states are being cut out of the loop and whatnot, that, yes, they have done this, but what used to make Australia the lucky country
is now gone.
It's disappearing. And they've had these budget surpluses every year that they end up giving back in some sort of payout. But the only reason that they have these surpluses is because they've starved the support network of Australian society. And now with the new industrial relations legislation that just went through, the average Australian is going to be screwed in the next 12 months.
Well, you know, I'm sorry you had to go through that, but you know, I unfortunately have a feeling we're going to have not quite that. But like I say, if Democrats get in charge, and they have any sense, you know, any brain function beyond the occasional spark, it's one of those things where they're going to have to make some decisions that I'm sorry for probably whoever gets in 2008, they may be a one term because they're going to have to pay the bills and set the ship back on course.
Well, and they better be ready for us that get them in to be very, very critical of what they do, mate. And
I tell you what though, if they do get in, that's one thing we got to keep on them. It's like, you know, you all are in there, and we put you in there to do something different, not what the other side's been doing. You know, we want you to get in there. You're supposed to, you know, be adults for a change, speaking whole sentences.
I think you nailed it there, and I'm going to stop you right there because we're up on our bottom of the hour break, mate. Thank you so much for ringing in to Head On.
Bye.
Take care, mate. All right, Agnes, kick in that bumper music. We are going to take our last, our top of the hour break. It's going to be me doing the news. We'll see you on the other side of the break.
He was a hard-headed man. He was brutally handsome.
Pentagon Radio Network News, I'm John Fox. Al-Qaeda terrorist Zacharias Moussaoui should spend the rest of his life in prison for his role in the September 11, 2001 attacks on the United States. The 9 men and 3 women returned their verdict on the 7th day of deliberations after reliving the September 11 attacks through weeks of harrowing testimony and evidence. Jurors were stone-faced as the lengthy verdict was read in court. Spectators, including some of the 9/11 family members, fell silent as Moussaoui showed no immediate reaction. Moussaoui stated as he left the courtroom, "America, you lost. I won." Federal investigators posing as senior citizens found that Medicare's operators routinely failed to give callers accurate and complete information about the government's new drug benefits, prompting Democratic critics of the Bush administration program to again request an extension of an approaching enrollment deadline. The investigators said that about one-third of their calls resulted in faulty responses or no response at all because of disconnected calls. The accuracy rates varied a great deal based on the question, but when it came to one of the most important questions, operators provided the right answer only 41% of the time. Shortly after taking office, Vice President Dick Cheney fought to take over one of the National Security Advisor's key duties, claims an unnamed ex-official in the June issue of Vanity Fair. At one point early in the Bush administration, a former official tells me, Cheney wanted to chair meetings of the National Security Council, quote, principals, unquote. The Secretary of State and Defense, the CIA director, and so on, in Bush's absence, co-opting the usual role of the National Security Advisor, then Condoleezza Rice, writes Vanity Fair's national editor Todd Purdom in an advance copy provided by the magazine to Raw Story. The House approved criminal penalties and fines up to $150 million Wednesday for energy companies caught price gouging as lawmakers responded to public anger over high gasoline prices and huge oil industry profits. The legislation, receiving broad bipartisan support, passed 389-34 and must now be considered by the Senate. But a proposal aimed at making it easier to expand or build refineries fell short, 237-188. It needed two-thirds approval to pass under special House procedures. The U.S. Postal Service said Wednesday it wants to raise the price of a first-class stamp by 3 cents to 42 cents and proposed a forever stamp that people could use as a hedge against future rate increases. A forever stamp would help ease the transition to any future price adjustments. The forever stamp would help soften the blow of a rate increase by allowing customers to stock up. As originally proposed, it would sell for the first-class rate, and once purchased, the special stamp would remain valid for whatever the first-class rate is when it is used, regardless of future increases. This is the news on the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
The major record labels say that downloading music from the internet is stealing, stealing, stealing. But according to these people, making a mixtape for your friend is stealing too. So is making a tape of a radio show.
Clone radio. We play the songs that sound more like everyone else than anyone else.
When a rock band plays an AC/DC cover at a bar that doesn't pay ASCAP. That's stealing. Or have you ever sung Happy Birthday to your friend at a restaurant?
Warning!
Happy Birthday is copyrighted, so if you're singing in a public place, you'd better be paying royalties, or you'll be stealing music. Does all this stuff about stealing music sound absurd? Would you rather have a world where our music culture wasn't the intellectual property of 5 corporations? Then stop giving them your money, and make sure your friends and family don't either. Better yet, try burning them a CD. If we pull the plug on major labels, music gets better. Find out more about what you can do. Check out downhillbattle.org.
Boston.com reports, the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, accusing the White House of a, quote, very blatant encroachment, unquote, on congressional authority, said yesterday he will hold an oversight hearing into President Bush's assertion that he has the power to bypass more than 750 laws enacted over the past 5 years. Republican Arlen Specter said, quote, there is some need for some oversight by Congress to assert its authority here, unquote. He continued, quote, what's the point of having a statute if the president can cherry-pick what he likes and what he doesn't like, unquote. Specter said he plans to hold the hearings in June. He said he intends to call administration officials to explain and defend a president's claims of authority, as well to invite constitutional scholars to testify on whether Bush has overstepped the boundaries of his power. Raw Story reports, A one-sentence item in the ABC News political report, The Note, hints the CIA leak jury is meeting today. The grand jury investigating the CIA leak may meet this morning at the federal courthouse in Washington, D.C., The Note says. The ABC report is one of the most popular go-to roundups for Washington insiders. No other details are available. The report could not be independently confirmed. Recent reports suggest the jury will continue to meet in the next 2 weeks as they decide the fate of presidential advisor Karl Rove. Rove's lawyers have been told the decision on whether to indict him for obstructing justice in the investigation of the outing of CIA agent Valerie Plame Wilson will be made within weeks. Raw Story also reports MSNBC confirms outed CIA agent Valerie Plame Wilson was working on Iran. This is the news on the Horn, the Head On Radio Network. From Sydney, I'm John Fox.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
It's great, no matter what the version. Anyway, welcome back to Head On with Bob Kincaid. This is John Fox coming to you from Sydney, Australia. Bob should be back tomorrow. And speaking of tomorrow, Bruce Birch is doing a very, very special broadcast. And he's going to be coming from a miners' convention of sorts. And a good mate of Bob's, Dr. Bill, will be joining him. And that's from 12 Eastern noontime to 3 p.m. Eastern. That'll be a very special edition of All Things with my mate, Bruce Birch. And I tell you, I can't wait to do Fourth Estate Radio this weekend. Due to situations beyond our control, we got, unfortunately, preempted this last weekend, which was, I was suddenly with nothing to do on a time that I usually have something to do, and I just looked at Gail and said, okay, what now? So we went to the mall. But anyway, I do believe we have David still hanging on line too. David, you're Head On.
Yes, how are you doing, John?
All right, mate, how are you?
I'm all right. I hear a little distortion on your voice. I guess it's because of the different levels of volume or whatnot.
Okay, I'll see if I can adjust that for you a bit, if that's on my end.
Well, I mean, it wasn't as bad as, like, before, but you know what I mean.
Okay, how are we doing there? Is that a bit easier on you?
Yeah, that's a bit easier on me. I was going to bring up what you were saying about what the bleep. And when you
right on, man. Please do.
When you said quantum mechanics, I remember... That's what I thought of instantly in my mind. I said, you must have watched What the Bleep.
Well,
I saw that movie in theaters.
And yes.
And how I pertain that to what I was talking about think tanks. When I say think tanks, I was listening to what you guys were saying. I don't mean to say that you use the word think tank. You can use institute. You can come up with a new term. You can come up with anything you want. But what I'm saying...
Right.
But what I'm saying, I think, is that, I'll put it this way, a lot of people are missing the boat, in essence, because we live in a tangible world, if you understand what I'm saying. There needs to be something
right.
Physically tangible. And for some reason, when it's on a computer, it's semi, I won't say mocked, but it's not taken as seriously. But when you put it on paper and you have it on a physical disk, or you have a 3D simulation model, then you become like aerospace.
Well, you know, you see why I was jumping on, you know, kind of jumping on the whole thing, and we got to see first What the Bleep down the rabbit hole, the
right.
Director's cut in theaters here about a month ago, and we just found the original version on DVD here, so we got it. Which was interesting because the original, it was all still really, in theory, they hadn't run the experiments yet. And then in Down the Rabbit Hole, you get virtually the entirety of the first film, but with all of the experimental data after the fact. And the one that just completely toasted my head was the audio experiment, where they used intent to modify the results of the random number generator on those audio tapes after the fact.
I remember watching. I haven't seen the new edition. I guess I need to see that then. If they put a lot.
Well, yeah, okay. So in the first film, they lay out all the theory of it, right?
Right.
But then they actually did the experiments, and they have some great animation where they show how down at the quantum level, when you follow a particle, it will act like a wave until it's observed. Then it acts like a particle. And the fact that they proved that something can occupy more than one space at the same time without ever actually seeing them travel between the two. And this ends up opening up.
I remember watching that film. They have that on the What the Belief site. They had like that segment of that. I remember watching that. They have like a narrator who's kind of like a cartoon guy or something.
Yeah, and you know they actually kind of animate some of the experiments, and
I'd like to add on to something about that, about the whole what the bleep in mysticism, and how a lot of people mock mysticism. I'd like to take a page from Grant Morrison, who he came up with the Invisibles, who was the influence for the Matrix. You know the batteries,
right.
you know the humans
right.
that are batteries, that kind of thing. And what he said
yes.
is, what people don't realize is that corporations are basically witchcraft. And what he was saying, no, think about it, though. What he was saying
I love it.
Was,
no, I'm so on the same page. I'm so on the same page. You're giving me language for it. I love it. Please continue.
What he was saying was, he said, you think I'm crazy, right? And he was looking right at the audience. He goes, you think I'm crazy, don't you? He goes, but think about it. Why are corporations using logos? Don't you remember where logos came from? Sigils. He said sigils. Sigils, and when you make a sigil, what do you do? What is the primary focus of a sigil? He goes, you didn't just put it on a stamp. What was it for? And the audience was like, well, I don't know what it's for. Where's he going with this? And he said, I'll tell you what it's for. He goes, you were supposed to think about physically something coming to happen, to materialize, to summon something, a will, just like Crowley talked about, and all the other mystics and whatnot. So what he was saying was, think of a boardroom like a ritual, a logo like a sigil. And if you start thinking like that, you understand that magic never left us.
You're making me also think of the film Dogma, when the angels end up going after that mock Disney company. On how they, you know, about creating false idols,
right,
and whatnot, and he ends up going through and listing the list of sins of every one of the board members before he ends up, you know, blasting them all to kingdom come. All I'm saying,
John, is that magic still lives with us. It's just taken a new form. It's a chameleon.
I agree with you, and I think you're right. We've forgotten about the magic. You know, and we've forgotten how to connect to that magic. And because a lot of us have forgotten, those that have remembered and tapped into it have been able to drive things.
I would like to give, like, one good, great, amazing example of magic that is on film right now. And it's The Russian Ark by Alexander Sokurov. Have you heard of this film?
Tell me more.
What it's about, basically, is this director, he's a famous Russian director, he had an idea. Can I shoot one entire film in one continuous shot with hyper cameras? Can I do it in one day? Because he only had...
Right, yes, I did hear about this.
The amazing thing about it is he has over 837 actors in the whole museum of the Russian Hermitage Museum. He has the costumes, everything down to the nail, and people were telling him, you can't do this. It's impossible. The Hermitage is not going to allow you to do this. I don't know why you think you can do this, but this is crazy. And they all said it. They said, this is a big risk for you, even the money involved. He was down to the last roll of film. I'm not making this up. Last roll of film in the museum. Somehow he got that week where he was able to do it in a week or whatnot. So he had seven different tries.
It's once you got going, I remember I read some accounts of this, and yes, he on that line, he created his reality. He right. was going to be able to do this.
Right.
He set up. He got up every single day, not believing that he was powerless and up against it. Not, you know, it was some sort of pipe dream.
Right.
It was a realistic goal that he then surrounded himself by the energies and the people in which he could do it.
The last day, the last roll of film, the last take. If he didn't hit it on the last take, it was over. He was never going to make this film. On the last take, he finally got through the whole shoot. It took him one whole entire day to do it. I urge everyone to see this film, not because if you like Russian history or not. It's just an achievement in what people in the cinema world said could not be done, and he did it. It's a 21st century revolutionary. And when I say revolutionary, I mean it in two ways. He resurrected Russian history to mean something other than as important as Italian and French history. And he shows it in a way where it's so graphic and in your face and everything is detailed, even the ballroom. And you can't believe your eyes that every single shot he does is so perfect and detailed that he was able to precisely put these people in a position. And you know what I thought about, John? I thought about what if all these people were just playing the actual part, and it was like deja vu, and they were ghost memories, and they were meant to be there at that time. That's what I thought watching that film. And that's what people will think, and that's what you will think when you watch this film, and you see the humor and the intelligence. I showed it to my parents, and they were just wowed out by it. They knew nothing about Russian history.
Wow! Now you make me want to see this film.
I'm telling you, when you see it, you'll think about what I was saying about having an institute, a think tank, anything you want to call it, a meta organization over the web or something like that that brings all these ideas to fruition somehow, to light, rather than just put them on a message board or a blog or an audio archive. That time has to evolve into something else, is what I'm saying. And I believe if you see films like this and whatnot, you'll realize that impossible becomes possible if you keep on staying with that spark of those people. Because believe it or not, I know you know this to be true, John, but the craziest ideas have completely catalyzed our whole society as a whole of human beings. So how can we reject them? That's my question. How can we
see that? We have been trained to reject them, and I'm going to have to stop you there, man. We got to take a break, and I thank you for calling up and backing me up on this idea, because I think that there is this whole collective consciousness, whatever it is, that we have forgotten how to tap.
I'll send you a link for the Russian Ark film.
Please do, and I'll post it up on the horn as well once you send it to me. So,
all right.
Thanks for ringing in. It's always good to talk to you.
Later.
All right, buddy. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we might have a very, very big surprise for you on the other side of this break. So kick in some music there, Agnes. We'll give me a chance to get another coffee. You're listening to Head On with John Fox today. And we'll see you on the other side of the break with hopefully a surprise.
Discussing child development with some experts. Tell me the normal development of, say, a 2-year-old.
My truck.
So a child that age should know 2 to 4 word phrases. Good. And what about cognitive development? Engaging in pretend play. I see. And what of social
development? Anna!
Being enthusiastic about the company of other children. All right, thank you.
It's time to change how we view a child's growth. It's not just physical. There are milestones your child should reach in how he plays, learns, speaks, and acts. A delay in any of these areas could be a sign of a developmental problem. even autism. The good news is, the earlier it's recognized, the more you can do to help your child reach his full potential. Talk with a doctor. Visit cdc.gov/act early or call 1-800-CDC-INFO. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Learn the signs. Act early.
Hello, can I ask a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Oh, it's gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
May I help you?
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
It's not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Okay.
Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing. It's not an option. It's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
When it rains, all my friends go away.
God doesn't like me anymore.
The wind could come and take your house. Santa won't know where to find me. Mommy scared the sky.
What's going on in the mind of a child who's lived through a hurricane?
You can drown in your bed if you fall asleep.
Talk to them. Reassure them. We can help. Call 1-800-789-2647 to make sure they move on healthy and happy. That's 1-800-789-2647. Trained and caring people are ready to assist you 24 hours a day. It's confidential and free. This message is brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Everybody, welcome back to Head On with Bob Kincaid. And you know what? It just might actually be again Head On with Bob Kincaid. Bob, Bruce, are you there? Do I get to hear you? Did this thing work?
I'm here.
Hey, Bob Kincaid. I'm welcome back to your show, man.
Thank you. John, thank you for the yeoman effort this evening. Everything coming through all right?
You might have missed my last bit. I'm just saying welcome back to your show. How you doing?
No, I'm hearing you. I'm just wondering if everything's coming through okay.
Well, I've got you coming back at me fine, and we'll wait
Bruce,
for
are you
someone...
there?
Bruce is in the building.
Ooh, Bruce is in the building. Bruce might need to turn up just a tad.
My goodness, really? Even more
if
than that? My goodness. Well, Bruce is in the building. Hey, John. How
you going, man? You're in West Virginia, I hear.
Yes, he is. He is in West Virginia. You're right.
Maybe we're trying to get too much bandwidth happening there, which is kind of a bummer.
Could possibly be, but, the gang's all here.
Well, right on. You should just throw Bruce on a mic in there, I reckon.
Well, he's not here, actually, physically.
Oh! I thought he was actually in the building with you. Okay, I stand corrected. Can't quite tell from here.
Well, that's what I'm trying to help out.
Right on. Do we still have anybody hanging on the phone as we can sit here and do techie chat, which is totally unprofessional?
No, not yet, but...
okay, well, that's fine. Everybody light up the phone lines. We only got a little over a half hour to go, and...
the boys are back, though.
John, can you hear me, John?
Ah! Yeah, I can hear you. Maybe you could do with a little bit more Bruce coming back to me, if that's possible.
Well, I'm back...
Maybe Agnes can turn it up coming back to me, but... So where are you, man?
I'm in Beckley, West Virginia, in the wild, wonderful mountain state of West Virginia. And let me just tell you, it was a beautiful sunset coming over the mountain, my friend. Fantastic. Yeah, just really did my heart good.
I hear not, Bruce.
You don't hear me?
Bugger. Well, we try to do these tricky things, and sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. But I bet Agnes is working on trying to get that happening for us right now. But anyway, Bruce.
I'm here.
You are there. I haven't been hearing you. Sorry.
Okay. Well, now you do. I was listening to the sunset. Yes, I was watching the sunset go down over the mountains driving up here, and I got to tell you, that is definitely an experience to behold. It was pretty darn amazing.
I can imagine. It's been a long time since I've seen it. Over 10 years, easy.
So. And the neat thing was that even though I was driving 90 miles an hour, it still looked the same. I don't know.
So you were hauling to West Virginia, were you? You made good time, man. I didn't expect to see you get there till after this show was over.
Well, I left. Well, I better be quiet.
Well, I can only assume he must have flown, John.
Ah, and there's Bob, nice and strong and loud. That's very, very cool. Ah, you're on the telephone. I see what you've done.
Smarter than the average bear.
Ah, yeah. He ain't no fool. Well, like I was trying to say before, welcome back to your show, man. How you doing?
I'm doing good. It's been a very frustrating technical night, but you know what you and I and Bruce are doing, John, is something that nobody out there in talk radio, let alone conversation radio, of which we are the sole proprietors, even begins to have the stones to try to do. We are using the very, very cutting razor's edge of technology to bring people together. When you listen to other networks, I'm not going to get into a bunch of inside baseball and bore people. You know this kind of thing. Some may not. We're using a technology that nobody else out there has the guts to try.
Yeah, no kidding. And I mean, you know, we put a lot of time into to try and keep this thing happening however possible.
Well, not just that, but this is the future. You know, this is the Wright brothers' funky little airplane on the sand dunes in North Carolina. Leading up, you know, in a few years to the stop with Camel, a few years more to the B-17, and, you know, and now it's the 747 and the A380 Airbus. You know, that's what we're doing. We're laying groundwork.
Well, you want to test this technology with conversation radio. It looks like we've got Bob from North Dakota on the line. You want to drop him in?
We could certainly try.
Ah, come on, Agnes, bring Bob in. Bob, you there?
John's there. I'm here, Bob. How are you?
Hold on a minute, guys. I'm working on this.
No, you've got it. You got it, dear.
I don't hear him on my end, but that's fine. Go, Bob.
Yes, we are.
Bob, you there?
I'm right here.
Okay. I don't hear Bob from North Dakota on my end. If you do, please pick up the conversation.
Yeah, sure. And what Agnes needs to do is to turn up auxiliary send 4 on your channel.
Okay. And we'll probably get there. See, long-distance technology work. It's tricky.
No, I'm sorry, Bob. Go right ahead. Are you there, Bob? Okay, great. I'm right here. Yeah, he is. Yes, we are. It's fascinating, and it shows what can be accomplished. You know, we're doing this on Well, you know, I've said that in the past. I don't have the engineering background, Bob, to understand exactly how this all works, so you're just as well off telling me it's magic, because it is. Or what, you know, one of my favorite metaphors, Bob. Not even a metaphor; it's a fact. The ancient temple priests were the ones who 5,000 years ago brewed the beer, because beer making was magic. Right.
The people in the chat room are mad. All of them are. They just keep coming back at me with information, and some of them even personal dates. Okay, some I think is out of jealousy, and the other part is out of just pure maliciousness. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you catch them, and when you do, I got two ways of acting, and it's not my fault. I was trained to do one or two things. Either be passive and sit back and watch it on TV and, you know, just be passive, or be aggressive.
Okay? Yeah, or active, sure.
Yeah, and when I'm aggressive, I'm not a nice character to meet.
I understand that, Bob. I understand that, but... What we've got to accomplish here is, you know, using these technological marvels. We've also got to be aware that we all stay on the same page in the hymnal.
I'm agreed with you, and that's why I have to step outside of myself. Okay.
Well, it's good for us to all to try to do that sometimes.
Really apologize to everybody for overreacting or understanding, you know, because when you don't understand something, it's magic to you, and when you do understand it, well, dang, we can flip a switch and lights come on. It's IOL, you know, instant on lighting. We're very used to having IOL, you know, but if you put it in those terms, IOL, people say, well, this apartment has IOL, and you go, oh wow, what's IOL? No, it's just IOL, you know. And they go, okay, great, I'll buy the apartment. You know, everybody has a switch they can flip and get IOL. But if you're in Iraq and you flip the switch, you only get it 3 hours out of the day, if you're lucky. See?
Yeah.
And the people of Iraq are not lucky. They are occupied by invaders. And Bob and John... And the rest.
Yes, sir.
We are the invaders. We are like the Nazis going into Poland. Okay.
This is what I was saying with one of the callers earlier. That we've been playing on the bad side of the karma card internationally for a long time. When things happened in 2001, at first, part of my brain said, "Man, we've been asking for this."
Ah, you too, huh? You should have seen me sitting there that day, you know. I was sitting there saying, what happened here, you know?
Well, you know,
not even what happened here, but how did that happen here, You know, everybody gets back on this 9/11 kick, but nobody looks at the real solid facts, okay? I have spent the better part of my life serving the United States of America, doing what a member of the Armed Forces of America does. It's supposed to protect the United States. But after 1972, we changed. We trained people. We trained the police. The people that were just cops on the street that used to go around and stop in and, occasionally get a free donut shop and make sure that, you know, whatever, okay? They used to walk the street. Cops used to walk on the sidewalk and say good morning to people, and they were visible. Now they're in these speeding vehicles that with flashing lights are mesmerizing people into believing that they are police that are doing the policing, but they're not. What they are kind of like a pseudo-military going around.
Paramilitary.
There you go. Paramilitary going after the reaction to an event, okay? It's kind of like what we do in Iraq. Somebody blows up a market, we send out lots of troops out there, and then they send out the people to pick up the bodies and throw them in the back of a truck and wash it down with hoses and stuff, and then we leave. But it does not police the area. We don't have people actually interacting with the people. We don't even have them in this country, Bob. When's the last time you saw a cop walking a beat in a town?
Oh, I can't even begin to tell you.
Yeah, they don't exist. You will see them in fast, speedy cars. You'll see them chasing people down with groups of them like paramilitary surrounding an individual or a group of individuals and saying that they are policing the village. But they don't know the shopkeepers. They don't know people. They don't have connection with the populace. And that's one thing the military does very well. We have no connection. We have no empathy. We have no sympathy. We have no connection with the people that we're destroying. It's kind of like...
Well, and in a wartime situation, you don't want that empathy, do you, Bob?
Well, we're not talking war here.
I understand, but that's what I've said all along. You can't take people whose primary job has been killing people and blowing things up and making a general mess and turn around and ask them to establish long-lasting relationships with the shopkeeper on the block.
Bingo. See,
it's bass-ackward.
See, you have it in your mind, right, but the population of the United States, I mean, I'm not talking about you and me and John and the people.
No, you're talking about the sheeple.
I'm talking about those people that have been mesmerized by the magic, okay? I'm talking about those people that have been mesmerized by the magic, Bob. I'm talking about those common people that are just normal, workaday people, go to their job, want to raise their family.
Well, you know, Bob, you remind me of something. There is on the great, great, great piece of performance art commonly known as Dark Side of the Moon by Pink Floyd.
Ah.
There is a lyric. And that lyric says, "And far away across the field, the tolling of an iron bell calls the faithful to their knees to hear the softly spoken magic spell."
There you go. See, and that's what that young man up there, where is he, in Maine?
In Maine, David in Maine.
Oh, my God, that boy is profound in his intellect. He really is. He's profound because he grasps something that most of us old I was going to say FARTSs, don't grasp. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
We don't get it. But this young man, he has that gift of...
Well, this is a discussion that's been going on for at least 400 years, Bob, because, you can read it right there in the pages of Hamlet when Hamlet says, there are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in your philosophy.
Absolutely.
I guess the best term for me is agnostic. What I don't know, I don't know.
Exactly.
It doesn't exclude its existence.
But see, he's talking about physical particles of atoms being split off, and you know, and pieces of the universe that you and I may not grasp, but if we just open our mind, Bob. If you just open your mind beyond what you believe, there goes that word again. I'm sorry.
The most dangerous word in the English language, Bob.
Right. And just allow it to imagine. That's why I have never tried to stifle my children's imagination. I just think it's a beautiful thing. And that young man has not only imagination, but he has a gift. And I just, oh, my goodness, I could see someone with that kind of a gift in the White House. Not this brain-dead Neo whatever he is.
Well, we stopped having visionaries in the White House for the most part long about, James Madison?
I think.
James Monroe?
I think. Washington. Thoreau was in the White House?
No, Monroe, James Monroe.
James Monroe. Okay, I'll give you that one, but I think the last visionary we had I think it was George Washington when he said, may this country be blessed forever with liberality.
Yes.
Liberality is liberal. You know, it starts with that beautiful word liberal. You know, the if you allow things.
Latin, liber, free.
Yeah.
Freedom.
And it's not a dirty word either.
Yeah. Well, anyway, gentlemen, I'm probably eating up about the last hours of sunlight here, and they're not ancient either. They're just the last hours of sunlight.
Well, there are a couple of things we want to yak about before we close the show, but thank you very much for your thoughts, Bob. I do appreciate it.
I did want to say one thing, though. What I saw
yesterday.
What I saw yesterday, and maybe, and I pray to God, and I told you this in my email to you, that I pray to God that I'm deluded, okay? I want to be deluded or delusional or absolutely on the, you know, tipped over kind, you know, where I've slid down the scale to the point where, hey, stick me in a rubber room, okay? I saw them when I saw the bomb bays open on the 52s, the B-52s, up at the air base where I and my lady shop and go to see the doctor. And I saw them changing racks. And I asked some of the boys down at the BX and when I was getting my hair cut and when I was over at the hospital. And, you know, you can... excuse me. I'm an old Marine sergeant, and I know how to play people, Bob.
Mm-hmm.
And I know how to understand them in certain ways. I don't really, you know, I'm no philosopher, I'm no psychologist, I'm no psychiatrist, but I'm talking to people of my rate, my rank, where I come from, okay?
Right.
And these guys, you know, they'll talk to me straight up. I mean, if you speak the language, and I speak it, I walk it, I talk it, I lived it. But when they start changing racks, and racks are the things you hang bombs on.
Right.
And we've been, most of the fleet, and I say the fleet. When I say the fleet, I'm talking about several years, for a long, long time, the conventional rack. Conventional racks are those that deliver conventional bombs and smart bombs and those kinds of things, right? Okay.
Well, I can see where you would be disturbed.
Huh?
I can see where it would disturb you.
Well, when you start changing them out, Bob, you're not talking conventional anymore.
No. No, the real dirty stuff.
You're talking about unconventional, and, you know, I reasoned it out today. Yesterday, I had a real bad problem coming home. I didn't know how to say it to my lady. I didn't know how to say it to my son. I didn't know how to talk to my other son. Because I was thinking Armageddon. I was thinking this is the day that we say goodbye and we kiss and hug. And I hugged him when he went off to school, which I haven't done in a long time. He looked at me kind of strange, like, Dad, I'm a big 12-year-old. And I held him in my arms. I just hugged him. Now, I reasoned it through today, and I got this thought in my mind. And it's like we did in the 50s, okay? What we did in the 60s when we used to send them up in fleets of B-52s armed with nuclear weapons threatening the Soviet Union.
Yeah, just hovering at their fail-safe zones.
Just fly them to the fail-safe and then, you know, let people know we can bring them in any time and threaten them if you keep threatening them. And that's one thing that this Bush administration is good at. Is threatening. They threaten the world. They threaten this nation. They threaten everybody. And they are very good at threatening. But how many of us are willing to just say enough? We did it to the Soviet Union over a long period of time for no damn good reason. And now we're threatening who? Who are we threatening?
Well, but bear in mind, Bob. We're doing it to the peoples of the Middle East as well, only it doesn't have to be anything nearly as overt and obvious as a circling B-52.
No.
We have Los Angeles-class submarines underneath the waters of the Indian Ocean, of the Red Sea, the Persian Gulf.
Do you know that...
And they've got nuclear-tipped Tomahawk cruise missiles that can do the same trick.
That is fact. But I want to... One thing unique about the state of North Dakota, where I live, is that if North Dakota alone, the one state of North Dakota, seceded from the Union, okay,
mm-hmm.
and became a nation, we would be the third largest nuclear power on the planet. There would be China, the rest of the United States,
in North Dakota.
Union. China. Okay, but fourth, I guess. We'd be the... Well, yeah, the third, I guess, because the Soviet Union is pretty well...
There is no Soviet Union.
But, huh?
There is no Soviet Union.
Well, that's right.
It'd be number three. Bob, we've got to roll on, brother.
Okay, well, hey, thank you, guys. I'm sorry for my...
No, don't apologize, but we do have to go.
The word was foupa, right?
Right, sure.
Okay. Take care, my friend.
You too.
Night.
We'll
Bye-bye.
Talk soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
So you want to take a quick break, Bob, before wrapping up your show?
No, let's just wrap it.
Okay, man. Well, so give us the rundown on what's going on tomorrow with you and the doctor and Bruce there in West Virginia.
Well, the way it's going to shake out is a very special edition of horn programming from noon to 3 Eastern time, of course, out on the West Coast. That'll be 9 to noon. I hope everyone can join us because it will be a special treat. I'm here, of course, but there in beautiful Beckley, West Virginia, is our good friend Bruce, and he will be joined by a special guest by the name of Dr. Bill O'Brien. As sharp, smart, incisive, and enjoyable a conversationalist as one is ever likely to listen to or partake in conversation with. And that'll
happen
from noon to 3, and it's going to be terribly, terribly exciting.
Sounds great, man. I can't wait to get up even earlier than I already do to listen to it tomorrow.
Yeah, you'll be up in the middle of the night, won't you?
Well, only be 6 a.m. or something like that, I think, is how the math works out. No, it's actually earlier than that. Ooh, it is going to be kind of painful, but I will have to do it. And this is happening. Does this have to do with the Carpenters and Millwrights?
Well, it does
in some way.
It does, John, because the Carpenters are sponsoring the they're sponsors of the Business Expo there in Beckley, and we will our table, our little booth for the Head On Radio Network will be right next to theirs, and it's kind of a coming out party, I think.
I love it. I love it. I'm really excited about this, and I just wish, you know, I was closer to be more involved with it. I sometimes feel like the satellite guy over here at the moment, but just looking at what we've juggled around today, you know, it is really exciting what we're trying to do with this Head On Radio Network. And I don't know if you got to catch kind of the early parts of the show, but we started talking about the need very possibly for some organized think tank type things from our side, and even was proposed
and this is
that maybe
I think we're doing part of that, John.
Well, that was the thing, that the line of conversation was actually, you know, the people who are involved in the Horn and our greater community could actually maybe be the basis of one. And I hadn't even thought of it before then, and it's an interesting prospect.
It very much is. Well, I guess we'd better wrap it up and knock it off, hadn't we?
Right on, man. You know, as usual, the show has been produced by Agnes, who's had one heck of a juggle all day. The
Brian
lights
Reznor,
are kept
Brian Reznor
on.
Announces. Randy Kirk is our engineer.
Right on. And as usual, the West Virginia Council of Carpenters and Millwrights keeps everything happening on this network as it stands today. And they're building the American dream every day, and we'd be dead in the water if it wasn't for them.
That's the absolute truth. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.